Have you ever wondered what you would get if you crossed a school teacher with a vampire hunter? You would get a character that almost always has a plan, rarely curses, but is willing to rip your heart out. The fantasy novel Blood Magic by R.L. Collins has been released on Amazon. Welcome to Blood Magic, the podcast. Selena Anderson is a small-town teacher with a big-time problem with vampires who are out to kill her before she can make them her next meal. She is looking forward to a quiet, lazy summer in Culpeper, Virginia. At least this is her plan until three strangers enter her life in one day. This is the second episode of Blood Magic, the podcast. Prologue. Warrenton, Virginia. Blood is a funny thing. It can bring you life. It can bring you death. Beth Cooper would die tonight, even if she passed the test of blood. My fangs dropped, and I practically trembled with the anticipation of her sweet blood. I watched her from across the street in the dark park as she escorted her party guests to their luxury cars. Diamonds sparkled at her neck, and she wore a red fitted chiffon dress. She lived in an exclusive and expensive neighborhood. Her Victorian-style mansion loomed over the rise of a green hill turned silver in the moonlight. Rich bitch. She reminded me of the wicked Victorian women that used me as their plaything centuries ago. They'd use men just like me, then kick us out onto the streets. Minutes later, Beth was alone, and I was knocking on her door with my human and vampire men. She was so spoiled and comfortable, she didn't even look out the window next to the front door to see who was knocking. As the door inched open, I kicked it in. It crashed into the wall of the foyer, ruining the plaster. Beth's human eyes could not track my movements. I had her strung up against the far wall, my hand wrapped around her neck, stifling any attempts to scream. Her diamond choker cut into her skin, and I could smell the blood that began to seep through. She tried to claw at my hands and kick me with her high-heeled feet. I raised her off the ground and shook her until she was dizzy and confused. I barked my orders at my men to secure the house. One of them closed the front door with a deceptively quiet click and turned on the lock. They fanned out, checking the first level and the upstairs rooms. Shortly afterwards, they confirmed that Beth was alone. All guests and house staff had been sent home for the night. I got up close in Beth's face, scenting her expensive perfume and the spice of her fear. Her gray eyes were large saucers. "Now, Beth," I said, using my best good fellow tone, "you be a good girl, and we're going to take this into the living room. Do not scream or try to run away, or things will get ugly." I laughed at my own threat. Things were going to get ugly no matter what she did. I released my hold on her, and she slumped to the ground, a mess of sniveling and tear-streaked mascara. I pulled her up by her skinny arm and propelled her towards the living room. I spared a glance at Nick on my right. He turned his human eyes to me. They were blood red, the telltale sign that the drug I'd given him was still working. "Go fetch us a chair from the dining room and bring it into the living room," I commanded. "Yes, Marcus," he said, completely under my control. He ambled off to do my bidding. I turned to Stephen, who was directly behind him. "I want the mirror. It's probably in her bedroom. Find it and bring it to me," I said. "Yes, Marcus," he parroted his drug-addled friend and broke off from the team to climb the spiraling staircase. I instructed half the men to spread out around the house and cover the exits and watch for any uninvited guests. In the living room, I tied Beth to the high-backed dining room chair with rope I brought along just for this occasion. I reclined on the Italian leather couch in front of her, stretching out my lean 6'4" frame. "I have money in the safe upstairs," Beth began. Her voice was raspy from her bruised throat. "I'll give you the combination. You can take it all. I won't tell anybody." I'm not here for that, I said as I steepled my fingers under my chin. I have jewelry, real diamonds and other gems. You can have those too. She was determined. I'm not here for material things, I drawled. Beth visibly stiffened in her seat and pressed her thighs together. Then what do you want? I threw my head back and laughed. I couldn't resist. I'm not here for that either. Your teeth, she gasped. What are you? I sat up, leaning my elbows on my knees and grinned at her. I felt my teeth lengthen even more. Oh, honey, I'm the big bad wolf. No, Beth said, her voice quivering. You're right. I'm not a wolf. Those are in another county in Virginia. I didn't usually tease my dinner, but there was something about Beth that was especially entertaining. The fact that you don't know what I am tells me that your parents haven't done a good job of educating you and protecting you. What do my parents have to do with this? There was a spark of anger in her winter gray eyes. Her face had drawn into haughty lines like the Victorian ladies I used to be surrounded by. I pushed away from the memory of my boyhood. I was in control here. I was the one running the show. I was no longer a victim. They have everything to do with this, I said. Stephen appeared with the mirror and presented it to me. I looked at the antique silver and intricate designs as I turned it around in my hand. I looked at my reflection. I had recently given my blonde hair a buzz cut. I could make my blue eyes sparkle with good humor and goodwill. Humans were easily fooled into thinking I was a carefree college kid. How did you like my gift, Beth? That was from you. She closed her eyes tight until faint lines fanned out from the corners. You are the boyfriend murderer, she moaned. You could say that. You humans have given me such a catchy title. I think it's rather clever. He gives gifts like a boyfriend, then kills in fits of rage. I quoted the latest newscast that I'd heard on television. How did you choose me, Beth asked. She was calmer. It was as if she made peace with the fact that she would die tonight. I didn't mind explaining things to her. Once I was done with her, she wouldn't be in any condition to repeat what I said. I like you, Beth. I thought you were going to be another blood bag surrounded by sniveling flesh. You've got spunk. I held the mirror up close to her face so she could see her own ragged reflection. Don't you recognize it? I asked. No, I do not. It's from your parents' house. Did you kill them? Beth stuttered. No, I quietly took this and left them sleeping in the warm, cozy bed. What does that have to do with why you're here? I've never met you before. I haven't done anything to you. She looked around frantically. You can blame your parents. They stole something from me decades ago. You're crazy. My parents are kind and peaceful. They wouldn't steal anything. They don't have to. You sound like some wounded dog. Grow up and get over it already. Beth cackled madly. I think the thought of her impending death had made her snap. For a second, her red chiffon dress was replaced by the bustle and elegance of a Victorian wife. I was naked, and she was throwing my clothes at me. No, not this time. That was then. This is now. I snatched the mirror back and threw it on the couch. I stood up and walked behind Beth. I wrenched her neck to the side and tore off the diamond choker. I could see her carotid beating, an erratic pulse through the scratches, dried with her blood. I'll tell you everything you want to know, but first you have to pass a little test. I ducked my head and gave her neck a long, lascivious lick. I sunk my fangs deep. She opened her mouth to scream, and I blocked her efforts with my hand. Her essence poured into me. It warmed me and gave me more strength. I drained her until her heartbeat was slow and sporadic. I withdrew from her neck and raised my wrist to my lips. I bit down. My own blood welled up, dark and potent. I carried the wound to Beth's mouth. I pressed it to her lips and held it there until she began lapping like a newborn kitten. I gave her about a minute, then I withdrew my arm and sat down on the couch. I waited. It didn't take long. Beth began convulsing in her seat. Her body shook with violent tremors that her binds barely contained. Her gray eyes rolled back into her head. She foamed at the mouth like a rabid dog. She turned a chalky blue and then was still. Beth Cooper was dead. "Well, boys, she's not the one," I said as I gave an exaggerated sigh and pretended to wipe my wet eyes. The vampires around me laughed. The drugged humans blinked stupidly. They were too muddled to see the humor. I rose from the couch and laid the antique mirror on the cherry wood end table. "Tear it to pieces and spread the bits around the room," I commanded them. I walked around the corpse and sauntered down the hall to the front door. I could hear bones snapping and flesh tearing as my men did as they were told. Once out the front door, I strolled down the steps and across the street to the park. I headed back to our black SUV. The park was a mosaic of shadows and moonlight that filtered in through the treetops. It was peaceful. There was a scent on the wind. I tensed and stopped by a scarred oak tree. "Who's there? Show yourself." A tall, hulking figure stepped out from behind a clump of trees to my left. I relaxed and immediately recognized my red-headed friend, or foe. I realized I wasn't quite sure where we stood. "Nicholas, what do you want? Have you nothing better to do than follow me around?" I said, half joking. He scowled at me. "Marcus, you must stop this quest for power," he said in that rich baritone voice of his. "You draw too much attention to yourself with this killing spree. You risk revealing our kind. There was a time we wanted the same things. You wanted to rule humans right alongside me." He snorted. "That was centuries ago. I am no longer a newly turned and foolish vampire. You want the impossible." "Impossible? Ha! I have found a way to control the humans and have them do my bidding. I can tap the powers of magical creatures." I raised a fist and shook it at him. "In time, you'll see." Nicholas shook his head. "So what happened tonight? Did your blood kill her or reveal that she is the one? I can answer my own question. You're still alive, so she was not the one." "Nicholas, you know I can't stand a know-it-all, but you are correct. My blood killed her." I stifled a delighted smile. Nicholas was such a stick in the mud. "You'll be stopped," he said quietly. "By who? You?" I narrowed my eyes at him. "The one. The prophecy of the Pack's people will come to pass. Not if I kill her first. You can't even find her." "That is only a temporary problem. But as you know, I am having fun working on it. I hope you change your mind and you are there to stand with me when I rise to the top." I heard my men traveling through the wooded park. Our mission was done. I spared them a glance, and when I turned back to Nicholas, he was gone. I was feeling pretty good. My belly was full. I had killed another Pack's daughter. I whistled a tune. I was free to move on to my next target. Selena Anderson in Culpeper, Virginia. Thank you for listening. Please tune in same time, same place next week as we carry the tale of blood magic from Warrenton, Virginia to Culpeper.